page, United States against Arujo. Ms. O'Daniel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Catherine O'Daniel, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Norberto Arujo. This case comes before Your Honors on an appeal following sentencing in a district court, and the overriding issue involves relevant conduct and its application in the facts of this case. It is bedrock law that the defendant has the due process right to be sentenced based on reliable information with respect to relevant conduct quantities, and that it is the government's burden to present such evidence and to prove that beyond or by a preponderance of the evidence. In this case, the government pointed simply to its plea agreement that was entered into with the defendant, and that was really where the problem started in this case. This plea agreement can best be described as an anomaly. This is a plea agreement in which the last sentence of the factual basis was a sentence stating that the defendant accepted responsibility for greater than 30 kilogram amount of heroin. You flip the page, go about a page and a half into the plea agreement, you find a statement in which the government states it believes that the evidence and the relevant conduct amounts to over 30 kilos and should be a level 38, but that the defendant reserves the right to assert that the amount is a level 36 amount, that being 10, but not more than 30 kilos of heroin. So essentially, the plea agreement, the same document, is stating both that the defendant and the government agree that the relevant conduct amount, the proper amount, is over 30 kilograms of heroin, or at least 30 kilograms of heroin. In the same document, however, the defendant has the right given to it by the government, and the government agrees it has the right to assert that that's not true, but that the correct amount is somewhere more than 10, but less than 30.
Was there anything in the plea agreement that superseded the terms of the proffer letter?
No, Your Honor.
Then why isn't the government entitled to use his proffer once he took the position that he was only responsible for a drug amount below the 30 kilos?
Well, it's our respectful contention that that was not a new position that he was taking. And when you sit down and you look at all the evidence that was available, being the DEA sixes of all the people who were involved in the case, and the plea agreements, and the defendant's own post-arrest statement, and even if, as the court found, that the proffer should have come in, even if you take that, that the time frames and that the evidence laid out in all of that together, it was our contention that all of that failed to meet the 30-kilo threshold. But I think that we submitted during the sentencing proceedings that we believed the government necessarily must have considered the defendant's proffer when making its submission to probation from the very beginning. And the prejudice to the defendant occurred when probation simply looked at the plea agreement, at the inconsistent plea agreement, where the defendant's both saying, yes, more than 30, no, less than 30, and probation took that and ran with it and conducted absolutely no relevant conduct analysis whatsoever. And when you look at the plea agreement, I think a little bit of time frame and timeline's a little bit helpful in the case. The defendant didn't proffer until January the 10th. And the report containing his proffer statement was drafted on January the 12th. The plea agreement was then given to the defendant on the 15th. However, material provisions of it had changed with respect to guideline amounts, and the defendant was unprepared because his lawyer hadn't had the chance to go through that with him, and the case was passed the following day. At that time, the plea agreement was entered into. However, defendant, during the change of plea colloquy, unlike his son the day before, was never specifically asked if he adopted the 30 or over amount as relevant conduct. Now, granted, it was in the plea agreement in writing, in the factual basis. However, the following page contained something that was contradictory to that. And I know the government believes and feels that those two provisions can be read in concert, However, we strongly disagree with that. And I would disagree with their position and argue they can't be read in concert because they're saying two completely different things. And we would submit that the district court, there was prejudice to the defendant from the beginning with respect to this plea agreement, because not only did probation rely on just that statement in the factual basis and conducted absolutely no relevant conduct analysis whatsoever. And in fact, when you go through the entire PSR, there is not ever identified or quantified an amount of relevant conduct. And they simply relied on the defendant's admission on the front end of the plea agreement in the factual basis. And
obviously estimates. They weren't actually weight amounts, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
These were actually estimates, not weight amounts.
Yes, Your Honor. The offense conduct were seizures, so we knew exactly what those quantities were. But the rest of it was based on proffers and plea agreements and the like, so they were, in fact, yes, estimates.
But then how do we... The district judge then makes a determination what it is, and then is it no longer an estimate, is it?
Well, the district court is absolutely entitled to extrapolate and to estimate to some extent, but here, when you look at the evidence that was available, we're talking about a 9-year time frame. Granted, the defendant did admit that he was involved in heroin trafficking for 9 years. The district court put a lot of weight on the word wholesale and said, we have someone who's admitted wholesale heroin dealing for 9 years. We respectfully submit that the term wholesale with respect to heroin is different than it is with respect to marijuana or cocaine, because someone can be a wholesale heroin dealer and be dealing in 10 or 25 gram amounts at a time. And heroin adds up, funny way to put it, but it adds up a little more slowly than some of the other substances that we deal with. But given all of the evidence, and even to address Judge Rovner's question, even given the proffer protected statement, when you look through that and you take the fine-tooth comb and you conduct the analysis, still the government was obligated to present proof that all of those transactions over a 9-year period, and many of those involved people that were not even alleged to be involved in this in any way, shape, or form. You're talking, it's our position that they did not prove that they were similar enough, regular enough, did not have sufficient evidence about time intervals between the acts. There was no talk about locations, modes of transport, the sameness of drugs. In fact, the proffer protected statement contained references to marijuana, to heroin, or to cocaine. So even if the court believes that the proffer protected statement was open season and it was fair game, then it's our position that that does not relieve the government from having to prove that it's all part of the same course of conduct. And we believe that there was prejudice to the defendant from and beginning with the plea agreement in the way that it was absolutely internally conflicted and at odds with this different provisions. And we would submit that it's important that the only analysis that was done was of offense conduct amounts, not relevant conduct amounts. And the temporal proximity factor, it's our position, was missing in this case, because we're talking about a 9-year time frame, and the DEA 6 reports did nothing or very little to fill in the missing details. And simply, it's impossible, or it's difficult to imagine how you can conduct a meaningful relevant conduct analysis when you never identify what the relevant conduct amounts even are. And to place such reliance on a statement in a plea agreement wherein a defendant is admitting a fact that he turns around and reserves the right to not admit is something that the court found problematic, and we would respectfully contend is problematic and presents a question of due process and fundamental fairness, specifically because it relieves the government of its burden entirely from the moment that contract was entered into of proving the relevant conduct amounts. And it was very prejudicial because the court said in ruling, look, the bottom line is he admitted it in his plea agreement, and the judge adopted the PSR and made its findings based in large part on that admission. One thing that I want to, I know I'm into my rebuttal time, but I'll be very brief. The court talked about a pattern that it had developed of 677 grams and talked about, well, if you follow that pattern in a six-week period, we're well on our way to those 30 kilos. The problem I wanted to highlight to Your Honors is that that pattern is derived from the star cooperating witness in the case whose own statements and own proffers and were used and relied upon to obtain search warrants.
Thank you, Ms. O'Daniel.
Thank you.
Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Your Honor. The district court did not clearly err when it concluded that a preponderance of the evidence established the defendant was involved in over 30 kilos of heroin.
Mr. Porter, why would the government agree to let him argue for a drug quantity below 30 kilograms in light of his proffer and his separate acknowledgement in the plea agreement itself that the relevant quantity exceeded 30 kilograms? I mean, were you pulling the wool over his eyes? What were you doing there?
He requested it. I didn't ask what his theory was, and I was the prosecutor in this case. I took a look, and it's not in the record, and so I hesitate to. But as I was preparing for argument today, thinking about some of the timing, I don't recall each instance of how this occurred. But what is clear is that all of this was happening in a pretty compressed time frame, and Judge Guzman had set a trial date. And I had been hearing from defense counsel pretty much from the day of arrest that the defendant was going to plead guilty. We had prepared a draft agreement that had no agreement to disagree, that had the defendant at a level 38, and had the in the factual basis this statement of he's accountable in the relevant conduct and the conspiracy for over 30 kilos. The request was made by defense counsel to put it in. Why he did that, I don't know. I didn't think then, and I don't think now, that he has a good faith basis for making that argument. But he had asked for that, and so we put it in.
So but, anything they ask for now, we put in? Is that how it runs?
That's not how it runs, actually, Judge. But in this context, there are choices to be made. Someone can plead guilty blind, and that is often the case nowadays, or they can plead guilty pursuant to a plea agreement where we either don't have disagreements or they want to reserve rights to argue about certain things at sentencing.
You didn't contend that he should get two extra levels for frivolous denial of relevant conduct.
That's not a guideline calculation.
Putting in the agreement, the defendant reserves the right to sink himself, period.
Right. But the evidence at the time of his arrest and at the time that we drafted that plea agreement was overwhelming. It included his confession. It included the confession of his co-defendant. It included over a half kilo of heroin buys directly into him. And it included statements not only by one cooperating witness, but by several cooperating witnesses. And when you put that all together, even without the proffer protected statements he made, we've got this significant investigation of him that is establishing his large scale heroin trafficking from a lot of different angles, including his own statements and including the acknowledgement that he hadn't worked for 9 years. And had families in two different locations and houses in two different locations. When you put that all together, the government's position was, yeah, that's over 30 kilos. And what he didn't do was the argument the counsel here has made, which was simply the government hasn't proved it, period. Regardless of what the proffer says, the government hasn't proved it. The defense said the government hasn't proved it, and there are these five factual problems about temporal proximity and about statements that were made and everything, which are rebuffed by what he said in his proffer. And it's at that point that we can then certainly use the proffer. The evidence was, frankly, overwhelming. It was well beyond a preponderance, and Judge Guzman properly found and certainly didn't clearly err in finding that the heroin attributable to the defendant in the conspiracy and his relevant conduct was over 30 kilos. If there are no other questions, I would ask that Your Honors affirm Judge Guzman's sentence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Okay.
Court will be in recess.
Okay.